840 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, your home for original reporting.
I'm Christopher Cruz in the Washington Bureau. China is unhappy with the U.S. this morning after an F-22 fighter jet shot down a suspected spy balloon yesterday off the Carolina coast. CBS's Lucy Kraft reports from Tokyo.
China's foreign ministry declared strong dissatisfaction and protest after its giant balloon was shot down by a U.S. missile. Beijing labeled the use of force an overreaction and argues this balloon was a civilian aircraft that strayed into U.S. territory by accident. China has not commented on Pentagon reports of a second balloon hovering over Latin America.
Evacuation orders remain in place this morning in East Palestine, Ohio, after a train derailment Friday night caused a large fire. National Transportation Safety Board member Michael Graham.
About 50 cars were involved in the derailment, 20 of which contain hazardous materials.
A collision between two large planes was narrowly averted at the airport in Austin, Texas yesterday morning. Reporter Chris Fox is in Austin.
The Southwest Airlines plane was cleared for takeoff as an air traffic controller also gave the go-ahead for the FedEx 767 cargo plane to land. According to a statement from the Federal Aviation Administration, the FedEx pilot discontinued the landing and initiated a last-second climb out to avoid a collision.
Despite the dangerous cold in the Northeast and New England, the mail is getting delivered, and people are appreciative, says Dan Reed in Central New York State.
People are always saying thank you, and I can't believe you're out here, and you're doing great, and you know that. It's nice to hear that.
Recorded at the top of Mount Washington in New Hampshire yesterday, a record-setting wind chill of minus 108 degrees Fahrenheit. Federal food assistance benefits for tens of millions of Americans will shrink significantly this month, and food banks are preparing, says CBS's Jim Krasula.
Managers of the nation's food banks expect record demand this month. The Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, benefits are cut.
We worry that we'll see a tidal wave of need.
Eric Cooper is CEO of the San Antonio Food Bank in Texas. The benefits are being cut after Washington gave all SNAP recipients the maximum monthly benefit during the height of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Tens of thousands of Israelis braved heavy rain yesterday for a fifth week of nationwide protests over judicial reform plans by the new government of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Protester Shai Spiegelman.
If the people of Israel is not going to do it, people are going to suffer here. People cannot stop. We cannot go back.
The bill ending 24-hour-a-day solitary confinement is close to becoming law in Virginia. The bill passed the Virginia House unanimously last week, 99-0. This week, it heads to the Senate, where passage is expected. From there, it goes to the desk of the governor. This is CBS News.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. The federal infrastructure law has been in effect for a year now. Community leaders around Wisconsin are optimistic about badly needed repairs and improvements. Here's Mike Moen.
At the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, Zach Brewing says so far nearly $3 billion in projects have been announced with funding from the law. Most are transportation related, and Brewing says it's badly needed as many areas have backlogs for priorities like road and bridge repairs.
And so by having a real strong federal partnership in the area of infrastructure helps address some of the backlog.
The law will also provide states funding for clean water infrastructure and expansion of high-speed internet. The plan did have some Republican opposition, but has otherwise been hailed by political analysts as a bipartisan achievement. Despite the significance of the law, some of those analysts say it hasn't stayed on the public's radar, especially during the recent election. But supporters are still getting the word out. Megan Rowe is with Opportunity Wisconsin, which has spent the last year educating communities about the benefits of these projects.
Whether we're spending less on car repairs due to updated roads and bridges, having access to safe drinking water or improved mass transit opportunities, this law is a once-in-a-generation investment in our state's infrastructure and competitiveness.
And as more projects are announced, Rose says it means additional well-paid union jobs for distressed areas. She says the long-term benefits from various improvements should particularly help rural areas and underserved communities. An interactive online map from the White House shows the projects so far are spread fairly evenly across Wisconsin. Mike Moen, Wisconsin News Connection.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell.
Hey everybody, how we doing? I'm Charlie Behrens, inviting you to join me Saturdays and or Sundays at noon. It's a horse apiece, whatever you decide. We're doing the Cripes Cast, where we talk to people for and or from the Midwest, and it's more fun than a six-pack of Jolly Good. Okay, the pride of Random Lake, that Jolly Good is. Anyway, it's on your Civic Media station and the Civic Media app. And do me a favor, yeah, tell your folks I says hi. Okay, real good.
The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us.
To the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. My guest is Attorney Fred Gordon, and former alderman in the city of Milwaukee, who now resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. We're talking about, you know, it's Black History Month, so I reached out to Fred because, you know, some things that happened in the city of Milwaukee that I think that many people in this listening audience would be amazed to find out, you know. And so we're going to be doing that throughout this month, bringing people like Fred Gordon on to talk about the history of this state and Black people in it. And before we go back, Fred, you know, what we want people to understand, too, is back during those times, we kind of had our own Bull Connor, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Harold Breyer and that police
Harold
department.
Harold Breyer was the chief of police, and he ran a very tight ship, as they used to say back in the day, in the sense that you had a small number of African Americans, and I don't think they had any Latin people on the force during that time. And he ran the city. I remember vividly during those times when the mayor, Henry Meyer, said emphatically that there's nothing that I can do to stop Harold Breyer from doing what he does.
Right.
And, you know, that was an admission that was very shocking at the time. And essentially, he ruled the city, and certainly the segregation that was pronounced at that time was due in large part to the control that the police exercised over the African-American community, and in many communities still existing here at this point in time in America.
Yeah, so let's go back to the open housing. And the fact that, you know, schools, the schools that were created to address this, the segregation in the schools.
Yes, well, what happened, Earl, is, as you may recall as well, is that from 1965 to 1967, there was a lot of activism. There were marches, there were boycotts, there were sit-ins. The NAACP, and more importantly, the NAACP Youth Council, spearheaded what was, as I indicated earlier, called direct action. Instead of just complaining about it and crying about it, the determination was to get into the streets, to march. We were taking our cues from what we saw happening in other cities around the country, particularly in the South. Dr. King came to Milwaukee during that period of time.
several times.
Dick Gregory.
Several times.
Yes. Dick Gregory was very much involved in helping to publicize what was going on and certainly marched with us. You know, I was like 13, 14, 15 years old. And the youth council at that time was spearheaded by Father James Groppi. And, you know, as you know, during that period, there was a coalition of activists, black and white, who were working together to bring attention, you know, to these segregated situations in America. And the Catholic Church was very much involved at that time in leading that. Father Groppi, as we called him, marched with us, organized, and spearheaded the resistance to the laws that were being perpetrated upon the African-American community, and the fact that, for the most part, all black people lived in one area of the city. And that's why the open housing, the fair housing laws that were being put forth by then Alderwoman Bill Phillips and others were contentious, because essentially they wanted to keep black folks in our place. And as long as we stayed in our place and did what we were told, then we wouldn't have any problems. But obviously that wasn't the case. So in 1966, I recall vividly, the marches had started to ramp up. And, you know, I was a kid. I got involved because the NAACP Youth Council of Freedom House was right behind where I used to live. And I spent a lot of time over there and got involved and got to marching. That's where my political consciousness began. And, you know, as a teenager, you know, I was reading James Baldwin and, you know, Dr. King's speeches, and all kinds of activity were going on. So the marches across the 6th Street Viaduct was the first time that I had ever marched. You know,
Fred,
in a civil rights march.
I know, but so Fred, before we get to the viaduct, what people need to understand is the viaduct was like a dividing line.
Yes.
White.
Yes, the viaduct was.
Go ahead.
The viaducts, and there was more than one too. The viaduct separated, you know, the black community from the white community. It separated the north side, where most black folks live, from the south side, where most white folks live during that period of time.
Right.
So no black people ever crossed the viaduct unless they were going to work or, you know, had some business over there. And very few black folks had business on the south side. So as a result, the viaduct was the dividing line. So to march across the viaduct was a big deal. And marches were organized and commenced. And there were several marches. There were marches every day, as I recall. And every time we got to a certain point, there was resistance, you know, by white people who did not want us, quote, invading, unquote, their neighborhoods.
So, Fred, people might want to know, were these marches just with black people, and how large were they?
Oh, no, they were not just solely black folks. During that period of time, as you recall, Earl, integration was starting to proliferate. We always had the opportunity to coalesce with like-minded white people.
Right.
There weren't a lot of them, but there were some. And as a result, we did have white marchers. And again, I have to give the church at that time credit because Father Groppi was the leader. You know, think about this. You know, we had a white priest who was leading the black struggle.
Yes.
At that time.
Yes.
And as a result, you know, there were other priests, Lutheran priests, Catholic priests in other cities that were doing the same thing. So that's what focused the attention of the world, really, on the city of Milwaukee, that you had this white priest who was leading these black folks on marches across the viaduct to City Hall and downtown Milwaukee. And as a result, Milwaukee became an epicenter of the struggle.
So Fred,
and the attention was being brought to bear, you know, on the conditions in the city.
So, Fred, hang on a second. Let's go to the phone lines and Andy from Beaver Dam. Hey, good morning, Andy. How you doing? Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, I moved to Milwaukee in 65 from my hometown, and everything you're describing is right. The Father Grappi would lead every day a group of African-Americans and other people over the 16th Viaduct Bridge over the Menominee River Valley into the Polish, what used to be the Polish section of Milwaukee. And of course, these guys over there, the white guys, they'd be waiting for him, and they would, this was a peaceful demonstration. But a lot of times those guys would, you know, throw rocks at him or, you know, or just, they'd really get mad, you know, at the demonstrators and get them crazy. As far as Breyer was concerned, you know, cops in the mid-60s always looked like, you know, they'd have the hats and all that stuff. Though that everything crescendoed by 67 after the riots when they closed the city down, all of a sudden the cops are wearing helmets and riot gear, and they'd open up the doors of their police cars and they'd have shotguns stuck in a holster in the door. I mean, they were totally armed, you know, ready, hell-bent for whatever would come their way, you know, and like you said, Breyer would rule with an iron hand. He was the guy, you know. I mean, I don't think he had a whole lot of use for the African American community. You know, he was a hardliner, you know. But it was definitely a time of change and revolution and whatever. And everybody, you know, wanted to be able to, you know, live wherever they wanted to go. They wanted to be kept to one sector of the city, you know.
Hey, Andy.
That would be my observation.
Hey, Andy, thank you very much for the call. I really appreciate it. Fred?
The result, it was very exciting for a young person like myself because I was becoming aware of who I was as a black person. I was reading and I remember vividly that when I joined the NAACP Youth Council and, you know, some of my friends, a lot of my friends were also involved, the marches were a major thing. It was being covered by, you know, the networks, because as we were talking the other day, there were only three television networks in existence at that time. So as a result, you had a lot of attention being brought to bear on the city of Milwaukee, because at that time, Earl, as you know, the city of Milwaukee was, you know, it was a Polish German populated city,
right,
with a very small African American community. You know, black folks came to Milwaukee after the Great Migration in the late 50s. So it was one of the last cities to have an influx of African American folks from the South to come up for the jobs, because at that time there were many, many jobs that were available to people. So as the caller was saying, the white folks would throw rocks and bricks and epithets at us and would charge us when we marched across the viaduct. So it's funny now, because they would literally run us back across the viaduct to Wisconsin Avenue.
So, Fred, because we unfortunately, we got to go to a break again quickly. But one would probably ask, what were the police doing during this time? Were they protecting the people coming across the viaduct who were enforcing their constitutional rights?
Oh, that's a whole other discussion that we'll have after the break.
Okay. All right. Hang on. 844-967-2789. Attorney Fred Gordon's on the line. We'll be right back.
You don't know my kind of music. Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
I'm Pat Kreitlow from Up North News. On an earlier edition, we talked to three women, med students, about whether they're going to stay in Wisconsin to practice medicine.
All this Roe v. Wade stuff, and now OBGYN's hands are so tied. I don't want to go through 12 years of training to have some person that didn't do training tell me how to do my job.
It is not a binary choice. You're for or against abortion. It is a healthcare decision. We all have those stories, and people want to hear them.
Don't miss the real stories here on Up North News.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
That dog does not want to be petted.
Well, life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. Take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Mainly cloudy skies expected tonight with lows around 16. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Daytime highs approaching 37. Tomorrow, overcast skies. A mixture of precipitation likely tomorrow night, 33. Cloudy Tuesday with a high of 39. 41 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us that same number. On the line, my good friend, Attorney Fred Gordon, and former alderman of the city of Milwaukee. He now resides in Charlotte, North Carolina. But, Fred, before we went to break, we were talking about the viaduct. We were talking about the fact that peaceful marches were set to cross the viaduct, and there was opposition on the other end. I think there were certainly, at one point in time, I think I read 10,000 people who were going to march across that viaduct. On the other side of the viaduct waiting were angry Polish and German people who did not want people. And so why was the viaduct chosen to cross? Was it because knowing that those vicious people were on the other side to prove a point?
Well, there was certainly knowledge of resistance coming from people who did not want black folks in their neighborhood.
Right.
And as I indicated earlier, the viaducts were the separating lines between the north side and the south side of the city. And that particular viaduct was chosen because once you crossed it, you were right there on the south side. Everything changed. And, you know, growing up, when you went across the viaducts to the south side,
it didn't go.
It was like a whole new world.
Right. Didn't go.
You know, so as a result, the strategy was to confront that reality and to march there. Because at that time, as I was saying earlier, the fair housing legislation for the city of Milwaukee was being debated by the Milwaukee Common Council. And Bill Phillips was leading the charge from the legislative aspect. Father Grappi was all about direct action. And because he was a white Catholic priest, he got attention from the media. And he was very smart and very skillful in using the media to promote what was being done as far as direct action was concerned and the marches that were taking place. And our strategy was to march every day until the legislation at the city level was passed. And that's what we did. And the response was, and you mentioned earlier, Earl, that the police, they were there. And I'll never forget it because, you know, they stood in formation. A lot of cops, probably anywhere from 100 to 100 cops or more. And they stood there with the batons ready and said nothing, did nothing, while all this chaos was going on. Because, you know, I had never been called the N-word until I marched across the Viaduct in my life. So as a result, that was obviously a shock to my system. But because we were committed to that aspect of the struggle, as we called it, we continued to march.
You know, Fred, as I think back, the over 200 days the marches went on in the city of Milwaukee. And why that's significant, Fred, is it's not like it's in Florida. The weather changes, right?
Yep.
And even during that inclement weather, the people continue to march.
Yes, absolutely. We got our impetus to do that from the Montgomery bus boycott, which lasted, as you know, for over a year, where people, you know, in the South, in Montgomery, Alabama, stopped riding the buses because of having to ride in the back of the bus and because of the protest that Rosa Parks was involved in. But no, the marches went on. Because people were committed, and again, the world was watching. You know, Milwaukee started to become more known for, you know, its segregated and racist policies because of that, and because Father Grappi was in the forefront, made it possible for the media to say, "Oh, this is newsworthy." But the marches continued until the legislation was finally passed. And as a result, you know, you look at what's happening now in Milwaukee, and things are different, but not that much different.
No, you know, Fred, what people need to really focus on is that at the root of these marches was the fact that black people were locked into a certain segment of the city where we could buy houses and could not. And were locked out of the constitutional rights. You're an attorney. Man, the fact that people, even based on what was right and what was wrong, and their constitutional rights were blatantly being disavowed, the fact that we had to go through all of that is pretty amazing to me.
Well, not only is it amazing, girl, it's instructive of the fact that that took place during that period of time. We now have legislation to basically do whatever it is that we want to do, but the mentality and the mindset of those in control is still the same. Witness what's happening in the state of Florida.
Right.
Here we are celebrating Black History Month, and legislation has been passed in the state of Florida and endorsed by the governor saying that we can't learn about our history because it'll make white folks.
WAUK 540 AM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold,
1993 to 1999, and again 2001 to 2003.
125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football.
You're about to find out.
Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger, featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown and Earl Ingram.
Monday mornings at 8 on The Shaw and on the Civic Media app.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden.
Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress. But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
AP News, I'm Ben Thomas. Cities across Ukraine have been hit by Russian missile attacks in recent days, knocking out power and water. But the retaken city of Kherson in the south has been taking particularly heavy punishment. Karen Shamas has the story.
The sound of shelling thunders across the Kherson skyline. Ukrainian troops on the front line launch reconnaissance drones to determine the enemy's positions before firing. Kurt, a commander for a military unit, told the AP that Russian soldiers had taken up positions on the left bank of the Dnipro River. While the goal for Ukraine is to push the Russians further back, crossing the Dnipro River has become tricky as both sides have destroyed surrounding bridges. A day earlier, at least five people died in the city from Russian shelling. Nevertheless, the mood in Kherson remains defiant and resolute, as Kherson resident Valentina Pedina tells the AP, Putin wanted to take Kherson. Never. We will die here, but we will not give it to him. I'm Karen Chamas.
Investigators say the gunman who killed six people at a Walmart in Chesapeake, Virginia Tuesday night bought the gun just hours before opening fire on co-workers. He also left a note listing grievances. Meanwhile, the mass shooting at a popular gay club last weekend has Colorado Springs looking inward.
I think a lot of people, including myself, might have ascribed to the notion that we were going to age out of hate.
State Representative Leslie Harrod is the first openly LGBTQ and black person elected to Colorado's General Assembly.
It's not going to just go away. In fact, it's being bred in our communities, and it's been lifted up. So we have to actively change that.
European Union data shows Twitter took longer to review hateful content and removed less of it in 2022 than last year. Meantime, Elon Musk says Twitter will try to relaunch its premium service next week. The last attempt was flooded with imposter accounts. This is AP News.
With the balance of the Wisconsin Supreme Court at stake, it's more important than ever to cast your ballot for Judge Janet Protasiewicz.
Judge Janet is a former Milwaukee County prosecutor and now circuit court judge who's been a lifelong advocate for victims of crime.
Judge Janet Protasiewicz believes in women's freedom to make our own decisions when it comes to abortion.
And she believes in protecting our communities.
And investing in public safety.
Judge Janet believes in fair elections and protecting our right to vote.
But the Trump-connected MAGA extremists running for Supreme Court want abortion banned in Wisconsin, even in cases of rape, incest, and the health of the mother.
And they could take away our voting rights.
The decisions the Wisconsin Supreme Court make affect us all.
And our future.
So if you want a fair, impartial justice that cares about us and protecting our rights,
protecting our freedoms,
and protecting our neighborhoods,
vote for Judge Janet Protasiewicz for Supreme Court.
Paid for by Janet for Justice.
JanetForJustice.com.
A boy's born in hot damn Mississippi, surrounded by for world that ain't so pretty. His parents give him love and affection to keep him strong, moving in the right direction, living just enough for the city. His father works some days for 14 hours, and you can bet he barely makes a dollar. His mother goes to scrub the floors for me. Believe she hardly gets a
up early. Her clothes are old, but never are they dirty. Living just enough for the city. Her brother's smart, he's got more sense than many. His patience long, but soon he won't have any. To find a job is like a haystack needle. Cause where he lives, they don't use colored people. Living just enough for the city.
Stevie Wonder, Living for the City. My guest is Fred Gordon, Attorney Fred Gordon, former alderman and, you know, and friend. And we're talking about those really impressionable times, Fred, that, you know, kind of made us who we are. You know, before we went to break, man, we were talking about the fact that all people wanted to do, man, you're an attorney. All people wanted was what the nation said, you know, we had a right to. And yet the fact that people had to fight. And Fred, in many instances, as you just stated in what the commercials that the news that we heard before we got back on the air, that there are people right now still fighting, still attempting to prevent citizens of this nation who fought, bled, and died for it to have equal and fair opportunities and representation in this country.
I think that what you're seeing in Florida and other states around the critical race theory debate and the suppression of the opportunity to teach and have discourse, intelligent discourse, you know, about America's past is reflective of what we were marching for and what we were fighting for. And there's a slogan that Howard Fuller used to use, and I use it myself, called "Aluta Continua." It's the struggle continues. And I think that that's the way it's going to be, certainly for, you know, the rest of our lives, because, you know, we're getting older, and the young people who are now in the vanguard of, you know, dealing with these direct action, marching, protesting, it's up to them to continue to struggle, continue to fight, because the retrenchment on the civil rights that were legislated in the 60s, are now, that's still going on. It's stronger than it ever was, in my opinion. We have legislation, we have laws on the books, but the reality is that for people of color in America, you still can't get a loan from a bank. You still have issues in terms of where you'd like to live. There's still roadblocks and walls that keep us apart. So, yeah, it's still a struggle. It'll always be, as long as we are in America. And I think that it's important for us as the elders to teach our children, to teach young people. And I think that that is going to be what our role is, because we remember what it was like. We've seen advances. We've seen progress in many, many respects. But then you look at what happened with Tyree Nichols
right.
in Memphis. And I tell you, man, those cops, they would have fit right into Harold Breyer's squad back in the 60s.
Fred, people who are listening may not believe that, but what those guys did used to happen with law enforcement in the city of Milwaukee. They used to have what they call an elevator ride. Remember that?
That's right. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
You know, they were, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Fred.
The police repression that took place in Milwaukee during that period of time was so ingrained, you know, in the psyche of people of color, black people, that
terrifying.
You knew where not to be.
Yes.
Even though they didn't have those sundown laws in the South, in the North, you knew where not to be after a certain period of time. And we learned very, very quickly where you could go and where you could not go. And if you went there, you should go in a group so that, you know, there would be witnesses.
So, Fred, you just talked about something called a sundown law. In this state, in the state of Wisconsin, let's talk about what a sundown law was, because some may argue it still exists.
Oh, absolutely. The sundown laws originated in the South. And basically, there were towns where it was posted on billboards and signs. Colored people, be at home or be out of town by sundown, or you would get arrested. And if you got arrested, you'd be in jail, and you would get your butt kicked.
Right.
And that was the reality. And, you know, we know all about, you know, the Green Book and the travels that black folk took from various places in the country when they were traveling in the South, you know, during the heights of segregation. And that was a reality in Milwaukee. I mean, in Wisconsin. You knew what was going on. And, you know, remember the Posse Comitatus?
Yes, you know.
Yes, that started in Wisconsin. And it was basically, you know, armed white folk who wanted to keep black folk from leaving, you know, the city of Milwaukee or wherever black folks live and going north, going up north. So that is a real history of racism in Wisconsin and in this country.
So, Fred,
it still persists.
And the thing is, what people should know is we're not talking about 100 years ago, right?
No.
No, you know, it's pretty recent history. And yet, you know, Wisconsin's still one of the most segregated states in the United States. It has not changed from that perspective. And since black people only make up 5% of the population in the state, you always hear that people are afraid in the state, you know, of black people. But Fred, why? I mean, what have black people done in the state of Wisconsin to impact and affect whites across the state? Do you know of any situations where we've gone into these different areas, segregated areas of the state, and pounced upon white people, raped white women, or you know, robbed?
No, that's never been the case, and it never will be the case. And as a result, the fear mongering that has existed throughout this country's history is still being perpetrated in many respects. You know, as I spoke about the critical race theory controversy, you know, that's a symptom of that. Why would you not want to teach people about history and not include what happened to people of color in this country? And now you want to spare white people's feelings, white children's feelings, because, Earl, the controversy is so ridiculous. The courses that are being offered at the college level, because I don't know about you, but I really learned about history, about our history, you know, when I went to college.
So, Fred, hang on.
When I was in high school, man, we never studied history.
So let's bring some...
We never studied slavery.
Fred, let's bring some callers on quickly. Let's go to Cassandra from Madison. Hey, good morning, Cassandra. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Yeah, oh, Fred, I am very much enjoying your commentary today. There are two points that I would like to get your opinion on. Number one, I agree with you about the African-American studies class. I did not get that information on the history of my ancestors until I enrolled in a course in college and also in graduate school. However, I think what the media is doing, they're not disclosing the full information about the course. DeSantis, he is a bigot, in my personal opinion. However, the course developers, they did not follow the instructions about what the state had wanted for the course. They wanted an African-American history class, not an African-American studies class. So some of the units that they were offering, it really did not meet the standards. I'm a professor. Whenever I design a course, I have to abide by the program and the course objectives, and the individuals who wrote the course, they really didn't do that. My second point that I want to ask you is, if you've been following the migrant protest movement in New York, and here is something that concerns me as an African-American female. The migrants who are out there protesting in New York because they do not want to move into what they feel are inferior accommodations, those migrants, they have that right to protest because our ancestors in the civil rights movement fought for their ability to exercise their free voice. Now, as African Americans, we are not getting involved in the immigration argument, and it is having an impact, especially on black males in employment in construction and the other trades. And so I just like to get your point of view, and I'm going to listen off the air because I have to get ready for work, but very much enjoying your commentary.
Hey, Cassandra, thank you very much for the call. Fred, hang on. We've got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Skyscrapers and everything.
Hey, brother. Hey, come here, Slick. Huh? Hey, you look hip, man. Hey, you want to make yourself $5, man?
Yeah, bro.
Hey, look here. Run this car speed for me right quick, okay? Run this car speed for me.
Hey. What? Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
A jury of your peers having found you guilty. 10 years.
What? Come on. Get in that cell, nigga. God. No.
His hair is long. His feet are hard and thrifty.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at thericksmithshow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
Catch Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow at its brand new time, 6 to 8 a.m. weekdays.
The city of Shanghai started administering an inhalable COVID-19 vaccine. I hear a lot of you saying the same thing I had in my head. I don't know about that.
As long as they're not just crop dusting everyone.
Crop dusting, that's exactly what I think people would be fearful of. I would not trust the Chinese government. I would trust people who really know about inhaling something and the good that it does you. Of course, I'm talking about Dom and Crute.
Uh-oh, Brad's buzzed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's starting with the woots. Good thing is, he knows when he's buzzed.
Know your buzzed warning signs? Call for a ride when it's time to go home. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on The Shaw. Mainly cloudy skies tonight with lows around 16. Northwest winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Highs level off around 37. Tomorrow, overcast. A mixture of precipitation likely tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 33. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy Tuesday with a high of 39. 41 Wednesday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
WAUK 540 AM. Brookfield's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at WAUKradio.com.
Join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Attorney Fred Gordon is on the line. Fred, you want to respond to Cassandra?
And thank her for her comments. The immigration issue is a very important issue because even though as black folk we're not necessarily involved in it to the extent that others may be, we clearly understand its import. And here in North Carolina, where I live, it's a major issue because immigrants and Latin folks from other countries have come to North Carolina, and they're doing the jobs that black folk used to do. And that's something that certainly should spur, you know, some conversation, because it certainly is talked about here. And it's very apparent. I've noticed that I've lived now for 8 years. And it's one of the first things that I noticed when I moved here. And that is something that obviously is going to be debated and dealt with on the border. But those folks are moving throughout the South. And, you know, they're taking the jobs and they're doing the kind of work that black folk used to do, but don't do anymore. And of course, they're doing it for less money in many respects. But, you know, for them, coming from where they came from, it's a major move up. So it's something that we should pay attention to, because I think that there's a lot of similarity between how they're being oppressed and how we're being oppressed.
You know, Fred, she also talked about the CRT, and you mentioned something about that earlier.
Yes.
Now, she's a professor, and
I believe I know her. I recognized her voice.
Okay. So, but
yeah, no. What's happening with the CRT, man? It's incredible.
Yeah,
I was listening to D.L. Hughley last night, and he made a statement about the fact that white folks are now trying to prevent us from learning about our history. When in the 50s, before Brown versus the Board of Education, they didn't want us to learn anything. So you see the dichotomy that's taken place just in a, like we were saying earlier, in a relatively short period of time.
You know, Fred, and the fact that it's acceptable. Let's do this. Let's bring Tom from L.A. Tom, quickly.
Well, I want to say this conversation is excellent. I didn't realize, being someone that was from the northwestern part of Wisconsin, that there was an actual kind of movement to not allow black people actually to move up into the northern part of Wisconsin. I think that people sometimes in Wisconsin think because, they love the Green Bay Packers and most of those guys are black, that means that they're not racist. Whereas if they had a family that was moving from Milwaukee into their small little rural area, maybe it would have an issue. I don't know. It seems to me that there need to be more people from Milwaukee and maybe more black people need to move into these areas. So therefore, people will actually, not fear out of some tripped up stereotype or some type of crazy ideas that they have. But it's the fear that's holding them back. And I think we do need to integrate by actually, getting more people, seen other than just the Green Bay Packers on their Sunday. Black people in the upper part of the Midwest and in the upper part of the northwestern part of Wisconsin.
Hey, Tom, man. Thank you very much for the call. Fred?
I think he's right in the sense that the perception of how we as citizens interact with each other is certainly buttressed by what we see and what we hear through the media. And, shows like this, forums, anything that we can do to educate each other, because it's not just black folks trying to educate white people. It's black folks educating black folks.
Yes.
It's black folks educating Latin people and vice versa. Education is the key, because knowledge is power, as the saying goes. And before you can get power, you have to know what power is.
So let's do this. So, Fred, listen, I'm going to be reaching out to you again because there's so much more dialogue for us to have, man. I want to thank you very much for taking out the time. But I'm going to be reaching out again. We're just beginning the month, and I need to have your voice heard more. You be willing to do that?
Oh, always a pleasure, brother. We only have 26 days, yeah. 27 days.
But we're going to use them well. Thank you very much, man.
We got to use them. We got to use them.
All right, got to run.
All right, brother.
All right, we'll be back.
Bye-bye.
We'll be back.
Hey, Earl, do you hear me?
Work, the kids' practices, household errands. Seems like every hour's rush hour at our house. But no matter how busy things get, we still make balanced nutrition a priority with help from Country Hearth Natural Breads. Whole grains and other natural ingredients are carefully blended and baked into delicious, nutritious breads like Dakota-style 12-grain, multi-grain, and 100% whole wheat. There's a Country Hearth favorite for everyone in the family. Country Hearth Breads, baking our best for you.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.